Winter's Business Lunch. G here, short for G Suki. Thanks for staying right here on WGN Radio. Let's talk with Jason Heiner. He's the editorial director at CNET. We're going to check in on some tech news with Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic. Okay, so there's some Twitter news happening right now. Its earnings were better than expected, and they've made a decision about political ads.
Yeah, they are essentially banning political ads, which is interesting because, as you know, during the an election year, political advertising is so huge, so much money is spent on it, billions, and to not have them is definitely leaving money on the table. But, of course, Facebook famously has had its challenges with these and the ideas of what's facts and what is truth. Facebook is sort of taking a pass on that, saying we're not going to get in that business. We'll just, you know, let anybody say anything. And Twitter is going in the opposite direction of just saying, look, we're going to not play in the game by not taking political ads at all.
And more fallout from the coronavirus in terms of manufacturing delays, including Tesla and also Nintendo. What do you have for us?
Yeah, both of them. Nintendo has confirmed that the coronavirus has delayed Switch production. Their Animal Crossing model, the pre-orders for that are getting pushed back because of because of the situation in China. You know, there's lots of people that are essentially staying home. Plants being closed in some cases, so that's having a big effect there. And then Tesla is essentially shutting down their factory, their Chinese gigafactory, while this outbreak is still in the process of being contained. So they had just opened this. You know, Tesla's famously made most of their cars throughout its history in the U.S., in California mostly. And so this was a big deal that they opened this plant in China, but for now, it's going to be on hold.
Yeah, 60 million people living under lockdown in China. The auto industry is particularly exposed because the virus originated in one of China's motor cities. Jason, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it. Jason Heiner, he's the editorial director at CNET. And you can read all these stories on CNET.com. Thanks, Jason. We'll see you next week.
Thanks. Sounds great. See you then.
Welcome back to the Winterest Business Lunch. So thrilled today to have the founder and CEO of Winterest Bank in studio with us, Ed Wehmer. Ed, welcome.
Thanks, G. Oh, I usurped the president. That's kind of cool.
Absolutely. We put in a little note to him and said, okay, listen, you can't cut into Ed's time at all, okay? Especially
perfect.
Here on the Winterest Business Lunch. We so appreciate your support. Of course, you're a champion of local business and entrepreneurs and, of course, giving back. Wondering if you mind getting a little nostalgic and reminding everybody how your bank got started.
Well, I've told this story 1,000 times. It's become folklore, but it's true. Back in the late 80s, beginning of the 90s, all the great community, Illinois was the last state to change their banking laws. So all the big banks bought all the great community banks, and we thought there was an opportunity there to become a great community bank. I was going to be like Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life, as
yes.
a local banker. And our research then and even now says 50% of the people want more of a high-touch bank. So, and that's what a community bank is. So over a case of beer and a box of cigars, I conned a couple guys, helped me write a business plan, and said, I'm going to do it, quit my job. I had 5 kids at the time. Showed up, rented a place in downtown Lake Forest, about 1,100 square feet. Showed up, didn't have any place to sit. My wife had to bring a card table over. And off we went. I had a phone the size of a work boot that would only work in the middle of town, and raised some money, opened the bank, and it worked very well. Then we did one in Hinsdale, then we did one in Wilmette, and then Libertyville, then Barrington. By the time we hit Barrington, I ran out of friends and neighbors and family to raise money from. So we put them all under one holding company called the Wintrust. We threw a dart at a book of English companies, came up with the name of Wintrust, and off we went.
I think that's a surprise for a lot of people because Wintrust is such a great name.
Yeah. Well, you know, we never thought we were going to sell the name because we always wanted to be the local alternative to the big banks. Never thought we'd be as big as we are. And we hit a point in time where we got big, and we said, well, we don't want to lose our approach and our community banking approach. We have to stay true to it. So we'll use the Wintrust name. We had guys for $3 million that came up with funky names, and that sort of stuff. We said, you know, what you do makes the brand. It's not the brand itself and the flags and the symbols. Nobody looks at that. The brand is made by how you perform and how you do business. And so we're going to stick with Wintrust, and it's worked out very well.
And Wintrust, the name, it, you know, came center stage, especially with a rebranding effort.
Yeah, it did. When we decided that the Wintrust name had to come out, we figured, you know, we said Chicago is such a great town. And if you look at any place 2 hours around O'Hare is really our target market. And it's really the 13th biggest economy in the world. It didn't have its own bank. I said, that's crazy. So we made the huge goal, we're going to be Chicago's bank. And we came out, we aligned with everything Chicago, the Cubs, the White Sox, the auto show, the Mackinac race. But it's not just the big stuff that got the name out. It's in each in Pilsen or wherever we are. We get so involved in the communities, and that's where you talk about giving. And that's all part of the giving back. That's the fun part of what we do is getting involved in the communities and really walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Yeah, it's definitely not lip service for you. And, you know, you hear people say that companies are always a reflection of the top. And I think the bank isn't business as usual because it is very reflective of who you are. I mean, you kind of defy what you expect in a CEO.
And a banker on top, right?
Yeah.
And wore a suit today, even for radio, for God's sake.
You look fantastic. Very sharp. Yeah. Why is it so important for you to be involved in the community?
Well, it's if you're a community bank, that's what you do. If you look at what happened in the fall, the business roundtable came out and said, we can't just worry about our shareholders, we have to worry about our stakeholders. I said, we've been doing that forever. Our shareholders, our customers, the communities we serve, and our employees, in no specific order. It's all symbiotic. If you don't have one, you're not going to have a business. And to be true, I've never liked phonies. So you actually have to do what you got to do. What you say you're going to do, you do it. And to be a community bank, you get involved. Our people really love it. It's really big morale booster for our people to get involved and see how we help the communities that we're in. And I think that's been a real attribute to us and one of the real reasons for our success to date. We're the fourth largest bank now in Chicago, mm-hmm. but the largest local bank in Chicago. Who would have thought that when I was sitting at the card table in Western Avenue in Lake Forest?
Yeah, how many locations, how many billions in assets?
We're about closer to $37 billion in assets on the banking side, about $26, $27 billion on the wealth management side we manage, and getting close to 200, I think 184 branches in the target market area we have.
Well, you said, who would have thunk it at that card table? So what do you think about that? In your wildest dreams, did you imagine this?
No, I didn't. But, you know, one of the things, we don't look in the rearview mirror a lot. I'll have time to do that when I hang them up, if in fact I ever hang them up. But you got to hang them up at some time. But I'll have time to do that. And people say, you should write a book on this. And every now and then we'll sit down and start going through nostalgia. There's some great, it'd be a great book. There's some wonderful stories that come through.
Well, you're a fantastic storyteller. Well, speaking of hanging him up, you just elevated Tim Crane to mm-hmm. president, and then you also had more than 10 people, up-and-comers, into the executive ranks.
Yes.
So what are you thinking in terms of the future? Is this a signal? What does it mean for you personally?
Well, you know, what we did was, we reinvent ourselves every 2 or 3 years. I think it's important to do that. When you looked at it, we realized that our senior management team wasn't getting any younger. And
none of us do.
Darn it. You had to take those probiotics, I
yeah.
will. But what we said was, you know, we have to, succession and perpetuation of culture is very important to us. Our culture is unique, I think, compared to other companies. You kind of pointed that out from the outside. But what we did was just kind of elevated us. Our jobs are, I'm still CEO, I'm founder and CEO. Tim is president. Rich Murphy is head of credit, and Dave Dykstra is chief operating officer. But what we did was we raised actually over 12 people up. Half of them were women or minorities. So we were conscious of that too, but they have to get some experience. And it's important that they, I said, throw them in the water, see if they can swim. But I don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon. I said, in the words of Mark Twain, the rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated, but there'll be a time when it makes sense, and we have to be prepared for that to keep this going, because Chicago deserves its own bank, and we're going to be that bank.
Well, love your commitment to diversity and constantly evolving and learning and being sure to pass that down to everyone in your company. We're going to talk more about your philosophy coming up right here on WGN Radio. G here with a Wintrust Business Lunch with the one and only founder and CEO, Ed Wehmer of Wintrust Bank. Thanks so much for being in studio with us today.
My pleasure.
I want to talk a little bit about the work culture. I had the pleasure of participating in a diversity panel with you last year, and I was so shocked that you not only took the time to talk with the panelists for over an hour before the presentation, but that you also led the presentation. So you really, this is not lip service. You really take the time out of your schedule to make sure and ensure that these initiatives happen.
Well, it's all part of our culture. I think our culture is unique, and somebody said, well, can you describe it? I finally came up with a kind of little poem. It starts, leave your ego at the door, number one. That's the overriding thing. If you're the smartest guy in the world, what the heck are you doing working for us? It's been, you know, curing cancer or something, you know. But take the blame, share the fame, avoid the shame, and enjoy the game. So take the blame is be accountable. A good leader is accountable. You don't worry about yourself. You worry about the mission. Something goes wrong, you say, yeah, it was me, and everybody should jump in and say, I want to fix it. Don't try to duck it. Share the fame means push accolades down as low as you can to people who really do the work.
Who knew you were a poet, too?
Oh, yeah. I don't really remember things. I'm not that smart.
Yeah, right.
Avoid the shame is, you know, you get a lot of times you get faced with issues that could, they're morally, you got to ask questions. And I would say there's the four M's. You go, what would your mentor think? What would the media think? What would your mother think? And what would your maker think? If it passes all four of those, you're good. And enjoy the game is the work-life balance. That, you know, it seems like yesterday I opened this and the kids were little and now they're all big and four of them are married and I got five grandkids and one on the way. It goes very fast. And you know, one of the reasons he started Wintrust was, one of the compelling reasons was, I wasn't seeing my kids. The Lake Forest Bank was opened five minutes from where they went to school. I got to coach them all, be part of their lives. They come in through their backpacks in my office, and they have clients in there. That was great. It was just fun. I was George Bailey for a little while, but we want that to be everywhere. We want it to be that community bank where people get involved, but they also keep that work-life balance. You know, I know you're going to work, you're going to get it done, but if you got a ball game you want to see, go take your kids. I mean, life's too short.
I was fascinated to learn, too, that one of the keys to your success was that you relied on people and that you trusted people. And that takes a bit of vulnerability.
Well, what we do is we do. We have a very flat organizational structure with 15 charters and, you know, all the brands we sell. But we have to put people in charge. And people have to have ownership so they can be accountable. So we set guardrails up. We use a lot of technology. But we got to push decisions as close to the customer as you can. We want to figure out a way to help the customer, not to say no. A lot of the larger institutions will figure out how to say no and go backwards. We want to say yes, figure out how to do it. Take care of the customer. If you push decisions down there, let them do it. You know, for $5, the book says you shouldn't do it. Just do it. Take care of the customer. You don't want to lose them. Keep them happy. So that flat organizational structure makes you rely on people. But I never liked bosses to begin with. A lot of people don't like bosses. So I go, they probably don't like me. So let them go. Let them, and the different neighborhoods we're in. Chicago is such a great quilt of different ethnicities and the whole nine yards. Every neighborhood's different. We have to treat them differently. We have to offer products and services differently. Why we have all the charters is so we can do that.
So you customize the financial products for each neighborhood.
Sure. Yep.
What do you look for in a person that you hire or you promote?
Really, how they fit into the culture that we talked about, and self-starters. We don't want people who, we like entrepreneurs, but people with entrepreneurial spirit, give them something to run and let them run with it. We get a lot of ideas that way. You know, if a guy in one bank comes up with a great idea, we can use it everywhere. But you don't want to stifle that. So you want, and a lot of times people need that structure and organization, and we don't have it. I mean, we have it, but not as much as you'd like. We don't have a lot of bureaucracy. My theory is bureaucracy leads to politics. Politics leads to ego. Egos ruin businesses. So,
what keeps you up at night? Are you concerned about, interest rates too high? Are you worried about housing inventory, a future recession?
Too low.
I'm sorry, too low?
Yeah, well, nothing really keeps me up at night. I've seen the movie a number of times, and not my first rodeo. So, you know, we got through the last crisis. We pulled back 2 years before it happened, and we called it rope-a-dope after Muhammad Ali, and we came out. We stopped growing. We hunkered down, raised capital. When it hit the fan in the fourth quarter of 2008, we grew like crazy. We've almost doubled in size since then. So if you just be smart, don't think you're smarter than the market. Banking hasn't really changed in 600 years since the Medici's opened the theoretical first modern bank in Florence. The risks are the same. They have different packages around them. But just don't think you're smarter than the market. Take what the market gives you. Don't get greedy. Don't follow the herd. Just do what you think is right. But hopefully I've got people work for me who don't sleep at night. But
what do you foresee as banking trends in the next decade?
Well, obviously the move to digital is important. Mm-hmm. And our theory is we have to have same or better products, same or better delivery systems, and kill them with service. So we can offer the best of all worlds, the personal service, which people like, plus everything digitally that they need. But size is going to be very important. I think rates are going to stay low for a long time, not just because of the U.S., but because of the quantitative easing, which I think has just been, and that has been my favorite economic move by central banks. But I think rates are going to be low for a long time. And
are you investing in, you know, tech innovation like AI or a fintech?
Oh, sure. Well, fintech is such a overused term. Is fintech the lending side or the deposit side or the digital side? Digital, yes. We do a lot of that. Account openings and that sort of stuff and all the mobile applications we have. But you talk about lending? Not really. I think that a lot of these fintech lenders, and they'll probably call me up and yell at me, but I think it's the next subprime. I think you see, you can get a loan in 20 minutes. That doesn't seem right to me. Got to do a little bit more than boxing it up and letting it go. But there is a need for that, and we have streamlined a number of things. But we'll always have people in the banking. Money's a commodity, but it's not like bread. I think money's more important to people. You got to have kind of think a little bit more about that than buying a loaf of bread.
So you don't worry about neobanks and like tech giants like Apple and Amazon maybe entering or taking more of the market share.
Well, they will. They'll take more of the market share, but the market keeps growing. But as we continue to grow and expand, there's a certain level of people, that 50% who want they want to be able to call and get an answer right away to somebody they know to five questions and not somebody in another country they're talking to. But in terms of artificial intelligence, we are doing a lot of that. In terms of robotics, there's many repetitive functions we go through that, we're dropping bots in to do that, and it's very helpful. To efficiencies.
So you see continued growth and, of course, independence.
Independence is important, but I tell people it's like Tom Hanks and Saving Private Ryan. Not my company. It's a public company. We'll always do what's right for shareholders. But I think that banks' size is more important than ever now. But to get economies of scale through size, it's going to be really important to make the investments you need to make to continue to be in technology with the big guys.
And Ed, I know it's going to be a long time before you hang it up, like you said, but if there's one thing you want to be remembered for, what is it?
Oh, boy. Having a World Series ring when the Cubs win the pennant, maybe getting one when the White Sox win the pennant.
Excellent.
Win the World Series.
I hope your wish comes true. Yeah. Thanks so much to CEO and founder of Wintrust Bank, Ed Wehmer. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right, a lot more coming up here on WGN Radio. Wintrust Business Lunch, G here, Amy Guth, WGN Radio's Amy Guth, joining us now for trending business news. Hi, Amy, how are you?
I'm great. I'm looking at the snow here. It's so beautiful and floaty and pretty up here. I mean, it's in a minute I'm going to go outside and I'm probably not going to say the same thing, but right now up here on the 18th floor, it's quite pretty.
It does look like a snow globe outside.
A snow globe, that's exactly, we're in a snow globe. Nice.
Okay, so you've got some breaking fast food news.
Well, I don't know if it's breaking, but it's okay. Some excellent shade throwing is what it is. And so Wendy's, as you might have heard this week, launched a breakfast sandwich. There's some interesting shade being thrown, right? It started this summer over the chicken sandwich wars, which we have discussed at length. right? There was a lot of that going on between like Popeyes and all these, you know, all the chicken sandwiches. And then there was a lot of pressure on McDonald's to launch a chicken sandwich, and that became a thing. And then recently McDonald's said, okay, we're going to do a chicken sandwich. It is going to be breakfast based. Immediately, Wendy's comes out and says, we also will be having a breakfast sandwich. And then they took another move. So on social media, a former McDonald's head chef is now showing up in, he is in Wendy's social media posts talking about the Wendy's breakfast sandwich. I mean, it's funny. It's a little story. There's lots of news in the world to be talking about, but I just thought that was kind of like a funny one in the fast food wars, right? Of the chicken wars and the breakfast sandwich wars. Here's this kind of really funny use of shade throwing.
Oh, that is pretty, pretty good, I think. Do you have a preference, by the way?
I've had neither.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. I have no idea. I'm sure they're both. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a good breakfast sandwich. Really, it is a great invention and a great use of a sandwich. So I have no issue with either one. I don't eat a lot of fast food, so I don't know. I'm sure they're delightful.
Well, I feel like we're going to have to do a little bit more research on this, Amy. Maybe you and I need a little
field trip. Well, it is the business lunch, maybe. Yeah. Not the business breakfast, but yeah, right. Maybe we need to do some pregame breakfast sandwiching. But speaking of things that are nearby in addition to breakfast sandwiches, Northwestern Memorial Hospital here just a few blocks from us in Streeterville, they have announced plans and they're seeking approval from the state for a more than $77 million expansion at the Streeterville campus. What they want to do is connect all of the buildings over there with one bigger structure. But what's happening is they're also finding that they go on bypass often, which is when, you know, you have to say our emergency beds are full. Ambulances go to another hospital, which is a big deal, right? When seconds count. And they're also looking at, hey, as the population, as people 65 and older, many people have at least one chronic condition in that age group. We're going to need expansion. So they have asked the state for this project. They proposed it and they put it before the state board that approves such things, and that board vote is going to happen at the June 30th meeting. So stay tuned for that. All signs indicate that it will pass. That's a formality of its process. So we will probably see a lot more construction right over there. The last time we saw big construction there was when was around Prentice, when the expansion of the Prentice Women's Hospital.
So you're going to be keeping an eye on that.
Of course I will.
What am I not keeping an eye on?
Yes. I mean, really.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go.
Okay, so this is what I saw that was trending that I thought was interesting and I thought you would enjoy. Southwest is giving its employees 6 weeks of extra pay.
Okay, I'm on board with that. I'm sure the Southwest employees are too.
Yes.
What have they cited as the reason for that?
It's giving 60,000 employees a $667 million profit-sharing bonus. So that means that some eligible employees will soon receive a check for around 12.2% of their annual salary, which is the equivalent of roughly an additional 6 weeks of pay.
So you're not talking about an additional 6 weeks of vacation or something. You're talking about here's just an extra check.
So it's like a bonus.
Thanks for being you.
Right. So other employees will get the contribution added to their retirement accounts. So.
I just like to say for the record that I am in favor of all companies doing that, and I'm not going to turn around and look at management right now. Well, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
This is very similar to what Delta did as well. It also paid $1.3 billion, the airline's second largest profit sharing pool in history, and it made sure to pay out to over $1 billion. So to over 80,000 employees. So
that's a thing. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, we've talked about airlines a lot, but we have not talked much about employees at airlines, right? We've been talking a lot about who is making the aircraft, what's happening in the airline industry. We've talked a little bit about, you know, frequent flyer programs and how those have changed and all that. But we haven't talked about this much. So I think that's an interesting piece of the ongoing conversation about, I think, somewhat changing airline industry.
Yeah, Delta's was a bonus bonanza.
A bonus bonanza.
Yes, that's what they called
Jose,
it.
Is that your word or theirs?
Yeah, so it was their word. So they paid their employees did I say it was like $1.6 billion, I guess, was record setting.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an easy job, so good for them.
And they said it was a smart business decision on their part.
I mean, you know, if your workers are happy, they're going to do good work.
What else do you have coming up?
Well, I'm keeping an eye, of course, on Grubhub because there's a lot of speculation about its profitability leading up to the last few weeks. That didn't make any sense. I'm going to say that again. Over the last few weeks, I'm paying attention to the snow globe outside. I'm distracted by this fluffy snow. Anyway, but Grubhub, there's been a lot of conversation lately about are they going to sell? What are they going to do? The CEO came out and said, nope, I am not selling. That's not what's happening. He was saying that on an investor call recently. But there is some speculation kind of about Grubhub's profitability, which is really part of a bigger conversation that I'm watching around Illinois restaurant owners. So there was recently a push in California to change the law and say, hey, look, delivery drivers are entitled. They need to be employees. They can't be independent contractors because there's food handling stuff. There's also fair wage stuff and other worker protections. So there's a looming, I'm going to say, threat, right? Of Illinois restaurants that are kind of banding together saying, hey, all these delivery apps are really cutting into our profit margins, sometimes up to 30%, which is really significant in an already pretty small profit margin industry, right? So a lot of restaurant owners in Illinois are getting together saying, you know, we need to do something about this. We need to have some kind of dialogue with these app owners and these delivery apps. We need to figure this out because it's not working. It's not going well. So part of that is a bit of a push to say, hey, could we have similar legislation in California here in Illinois, which would be really interesting. So there's a lot of conversation around there. Grubhub also, you know, they had a pretty diplomatic answer of like, hey, we want to work this out and all the stakeholders, we're going to, you know, all those kind of answers. But we shall see how that goes, because I think a lot of restaurant owners are really thinking very deeply about this, especially over the summer. We saw reporting around some of the apps were delivering food without the restaurant's knowledge. So there's a lot there. And I think that's a really big story to be watching over the next few weeks and months.
You'd be amazed to see how much surcharge you're willing to pay to make sure that you don't have to leave your apartment.
But... and hey, if you are ordering food today and it's snowing, tip well, tip well.
Thank you so much to WGN Radio's Amy Guth. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.